We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I've got Justin Mason here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So we're going to talk all about who he is picking up in TGFBI and who you're picking up in TGFBI and who maybe you want to pick late in your draft if you haven't drafted yet. More on that on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast Sunday edition, Sunday Fab edition, sort of, although I'll explain exactly what we're doing today. Eric Halterman here with Justin Mason of Fangraphs, of TGFBI, of almost everything. How's it going, Justin?
It's going great. It is like primetime draft time, right? Like I have to finish off my draft season, I have like 5 drafts in 6 days. So it's been a little nuts. Did my main event last night. I've got a $1,500 auction in just a few hours, and I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to get the season started. I'm going to take Thursday off of work just so I cannot have to worry about like answering phone calls or anything. I can just sit there and watch games.
That sounds like a great plan, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have drafts coming up this week, which is why we're not going to do a pure Fab show today. Of course, if you drafted, I don't know, when was the earliest league that you drafted this offseason that has Fab?
Okay, that's a really, really good question. It is probably my Labor draft or my TGFBI draft. And both of those, Labor was the first weekend of March. TGFBI started at the end of February. My Labor team is a mess. It is like, I got Giolito, I got Kyle Bradish. I drafted Scherzer as a stash. And so I was just looking at that, like, oh, I need some Fab today for that. And, I don't even have a full active lineup right now.
Yes, so there's going to be a lot of work, I imagine, in a lot of listeners' leagues, especially if you drafted, say, January or something like that. I have one league where I drafted in January. You're going to have a lot of Fab decisions there that I'm certainly not going to have in leagues where I drafted, you know, yesterday. If you're making a lot of Fab moves in leagues you drafted yesterday, I don't really know what happened. Something has seriously gone wrong in the last 24 hours. I do want to start with some headlines before we get into lists of names, although there really weren't that many since the last podcast yesterday. We did see Corey Seager and Josh Jung return to the lineup in Texas, so that's good news there. Is that enough time before opening day that we can basically move them back up to where we would have ranked them, you know, back in November?
Yeah, I think so. I think you got to move especially Seager back up, but I think Josh Jung as well. Just wherever you had them at the beginning of draft season before the injuries came out is where you should put them. So Corey Seager starting to go, you know, third round, second round, Josh Jung, maybe inside the top 100. So I think both are really, really good players that I think you should, you know, you shouldn't pencil them in for 600 plus plate appearances just because they tend to get banged up just generally. And I don't think you can just be like, oh, look, they already got their injury for the year. I don't think it works that way. But yeah, I mean, I think full freight on those guys is what you should be doing.
Yeah, full freight makes sense, but full freight has to include injury risk, of course. I think if you came into the offseason ranking Corey Seager too high because he had a really good last year and you just looked at his numbers and thought, hey, if I get 162 games of this, he's a first rounder or whatever. Well, this was the reminder of who Corey Seager is, but if your initial ranking factored in that risk, I think you're totally fine. We have a question in chat related to Josh Jung here. There's more questions in here, but let's just focus on the Muncy or Jung part of this one. Now that Jung looks healthy again, you're going to go with the Jung, but the Jung or the older Muncy?
So this is a good reminder when asking questions to always put your format and league size, because I think the Muncy versus Jung discussion has a lot to do with format, right? Like if you're in an on-base percentage league, you'll take Muncy all day because that batting average won't hurt you. But I think for me, in a traditional like roto average league, I'm going Josh Jung. The other question, Shane Baz versus Stroman. Again, format, right? Like if you've got IL spots and you can stash Baz, I'm taking Baz. But if you're in an NFBC context where you can't, I'm not touching Baz because we don't know when he's going to be back.
Yeah, I hear you on both of those. I was just checking Muncy's NFBC main event price all the way down at 222, not an OBP league there. Of course, that just shows the range. Whereas if you're in an OBP league, I think he's going well above, much closer to Josh Jung, who is, I think, about 100 picks ahead of him. Some other news. This is actually more getting into the fab tier of news because there's not many other big players who had anything happen to them in the last 12 hours or so. No updates on Shohei Ohtani. That's a Friday night news dump, not a Saturday night news dump. We got a couple players making the team in Washington, Jesse Winker and Eddie Rosario. Do we care about either of those guys? There's playing time, and they've had good seasons in the past, so maybe?
I don't care about Jesse Winker. I mean, he's a platoon guy that tends to get hurt quite a bit, and there's just not a lot in Washington where you're going, oh, man, he could get a lot of RBIs. I know he's, like, projected to, like, bat third in this lineup right now, but, like, I just don't care about Jesse Winker. Eddie Rosario, on the other hand, man, like, when he plays full-time most of the time, and I think he, you know, once Winker does inevitably get hurt sometime in April, Rosario could be in full-time playing time. So maybe not like, obviously in NL only, these guys are interesting, but in a 15-team mix, I came really close to my main event last night to drafting Eddie Rosario kind of towards the end because that's a good park to hit in, and I think he's going to get a lot of playing time.
Yeah, Eddie Rosario has not had an above-average WRC plus since 2020, but he's been at exactly 100 two of the last 3 years, so that's basically who he is right now. He's just barely fine. Most of the other news is involving very fringe players like Mark Vientos failing to make the team. If you have a particularly nuanced take on Jake Cave getting traded, we can hear it, but I don't think so. I do want to touch on your main event real quick. You did win last night. Did you win?
I think I won. I was very happy with the way things went, which is great because last year, I was not very happy with the way things went. I went away from my plan, because I couldn't pass up on Cedric Mullins in the fourth round. and this year I didn't have to worry about that quite as much. So I did get Cedric Mullins in the 11th round. Tariq Skubal failed me in the third round. His max, in the main event over the last, like, 4 or 5 days had been 36, and I was sitting there at 38 going, I didn't even plan for Skubal to be potentially on my team, but when he fell to me at 38, I was pretty happy. So started off Tatis, Pablo Lopez, Skubal, Hader, with so a really nice pitching base, which was what plagued me in some leagues last year. So feel really good about it. Obviously, it's a long season, and I had a bad draft last year, but I fabbed my way into second place. So this year, I feel like I had a good draft and I could fab my way out of the money.
Nice. That's the plan. So we're going to be talking about some guys who have jumped pretty far in the main event, in sort of the back half of the main event, because those are, I think, the best proxy I could find for players you're going to pick up in leagues that drafted earlier. Again, if you just drafted something like the main event yesterday, you're probably not picking up anybody today. But the main comparisons we're going to make on today's show are looking at players who were available in at least half of TGFBI leagues, because we have the king, the czar, the emperor. What title do you prefer?
Overlord, I guess, would probably be the right title. I mean, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I yeah, Overlord feels right.
All right, we'll go with that. We've got the overlord of TGFBI here. And with those leagues taking place in the first half of March, that's, I think, when a reasonable number of our listeners' leagues will have happened. And there's been some shifts between early March and the main event, which is basically late March. I think the first main event was 12 days ago. Also got some names who maybe were drafted in all the TGFBI leagues, but were available in at least half of the Earth leagues, the Earth drafts, another big industry set of leagues that took place in late February. So we'll use that as a proxy for if you were drafted in late February. These are some names who may have been widely available, but are now being taken in most main event drafts. So we're going to be touching on weird things very late in the main event. Although, did you see anything weird early? Were you in the LA De La Cruz 10th overall league or anything like that?
I was not. I think Spore was in a pretty crazy league where one guy didn't take a pitcher for the first like 12 rounds and then started off his pitching staff with Johan Duran and Garrett Cole. So
I saw that. Wow.
I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with entering. I was in a league, a main event league a few years ago when it was like the year where like Verlander and Noah Syndergaard were both coming off of Tommy John, and they weren't expected back till midseason. And the guy at the one spot took every single TJ returnee and did not have an active pitching lineup for the start of the season because of it. So it's always great to have someone like that in your league because you go, at least that person isn't beating me. But it also can throw off the balance of your league where it makes it more difficult for anybody in your league to win the overall. So that is kind of the catch 22. It does make it a little bit easier for you to win your league, but maybe not win the overall.
Yeah, fair enough. So you're saying that the person who drafted the strangest team ever with all the injured pitchers, they didn't actually win the overall? I thought they did.
They did not. It wasn't even close. I mean, they were buried by May. No shade to that person. I mean, no extra shade to that person, but like, I did a very similar thing in 2019, my first main event. I drafted a bunch of guys who were injured already. My team was very, very risky, and I was buried by May. And I had to work really hard not to finish dead last in the overall in 2019.
Well, if you are looking buried already with a ton of injuries, you'll probably wanting to be picking up some of the players who we're going to talk about right now. Let's start in the infield. And a reminder, the way I put together these lists, these are players available in at least half of either TGFBI leagues from early March or Earth leagues from late February, but who were taken in at least half of NFBC main events. The top list in the infield is an outfielder, Jackson Merrill. He's going to be playing outfield for the Padres. He already is, but he's shortstop eligible, which means if you're looking for a middle infielder, he might be the top name on the list. And if you're looking for an outfielder, he's also an option. He was taken in every TGFBI draft, though, because the news that he was probably going to make the team was percolating by then. But if you drafted pretty early, Jackson Merrill was basically off the board. Was he the kind of guy that you would put pretty big fab dollars on, though? Or is he just someone who you think is going to be there and be fine, so maybe we don't go overboard?
Yeah, I wouldn't go overboard. One, you just never know how these kind of rookies are going to translate. Merrill is not a guy who's got like a massive carrying tool for fantasy in generally speaking. And I think there's also a really good chance that he's not up for very long. There's been a lot of talk about Tommy Pham signing in San Diego. And if Pham were to sign in San Diego, he'd probably take Jackson Merrill's spot. So I think that it is probably, you know, if you want to just throw a few bucks on them and bank some early stats until they do sign Pham, I don't have a problem with it. But, like, I wouldn't go overboard on Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I think Merrill is an interesting player. I like the story of a guy who is reaching the majors faster than expected, but I'm not sure the skill set is immediate big fantasy numbers. And, again, like you said, there's some chance that even though he's here to stay, he's here now, he's not here to stay. Although I'll note, when I was putting together these lists, a lot harder to find hitters than pitchers.
Yeah.
Because guess what? A ton of pitchers get hurt all the time. If you drafted early, there's a decent chance you've already lost two or three pitchers. You probably haven't lost many hitters. So there just haven't been nearly as many changes. It's going to be harder to make big moves this weekend. You'll probably have to wait a week or two. As far as corner infielders, J.D. Davis maybe stands out as the most interesting one. He was barely drafted in TGFBI, just 7% of TGFBI leagues. But now that he looks like he should have plenty of playing time in Oakland, I mean, it is Oakland, and it's only J.D. Davis, but pretty interesting.
I mean, it's very, very interesting. He actually, you know, not very often do we see a guy get released from a team this late in spring and then actually gain in value when he goes to a new team. Because I think in Oakland, he's going to play every day and he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. I don't think the same could have been said in San Francisco. Obviously, the park sucks, but J.D. Davis has real manpower. I'm not, like, super worried about, like, the power. And he's never had a good home park. So, like, I think the power is going to be fine. I think he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup, and I think he's going to play every day. I drafted him in my main event last night as a backup corner infielder, even though I didn't really need one. He just felt like it was too good of a value to pass up. I like J.D. Davis a lot. Like, if he has 30 home runs this year, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah, I could see it. He's never had more than 22 in the past, but that came in just 453 plate appearances. So if he gets up to 600, just do some simple math. I'm pretty sure that ends up right around 30. So I could see it. Pretty decent chance he's available in your league if you drafted before he moved across the bay. Other infielders, not a lot of exciting names, at least the filter I'm using here. Anthony Rendon, Carlos Santana, Ryan Noda are guys who may have been not very interesting in your league earlier, and they're going in main events, but I think I can see from your face that you're not going to tell me you're all in on any of them.
No, I mean, Carlos Santana, like, is this boring old first baseman that, if you look at his stat line at the end of the season, you go, wow, he was actually had some value. I still don't want him necessarily, but I think he is going to at least be on the strong side of a platoon in Minnesota and, you know, could end up popping 20 home runs and getting a fair amount of RBIs, especially with the injury problems in Minnesota that are always present when you have guys like Royce Lewis and Byron Buxton. Like, he's going to find himself 450, 500 plate appearances and hit 20 home runs. So, if you're interested in that, fine. I'm not as interested in it.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that often ends the draft as the best free agent out there, but not one that anybody really wants to get because he's just going to be there and be just barely usable more or less all year. I do still think he is that guy, but he signed way back in early February, so there's a good chance that your draft happened after that move, in which case, if you didn't want him then, probably don't want him now. Throw in a couple more infield names. These ones didn't actually fit the filter. They were taken in more than half of TGFBI or Earth Leagues. But certainly if you're playing in a 12-team league, they're more likely to be available. Jared Triolo looks like he's going to start at second base in Pittsburgh. And Kevin Biggio looks like he's likely to play quite a bit, maybe be a regular primary second baseman in Toronto. Not exciting names, I don't think, unless there's more to Jared Triolo that I'm not aware of. I just see mostly a Babbitt-fueled line that's going to come way back down to earth this year. Would you go for either of those guys in a 12?
Maybe like Triolo, because he's gonna start the year with third base eligibility and pick up second base eligibility. So I guess like he might get a fair amount of playing time, but ultimately like, I think you probably find better options on your wire than these guys. I just don't like Kevin Biggio, like, is just not good at baseball. And that's typically not something I'm really interested in, is a guy who's not good at baseball.
Yeah. Kevin Biggio can take his walks. So I guess maybe in an OBP league, there's a little bit more there, but you know, there's been several years where he's yet to reach, I guess he had 16 homers and 14 steals as a rookie, and he's yet to reach double digits in either of those since then. So not much interest. We're going to move out to the outfield in a minute, but first I want to talk to you about Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring system, schedule. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more. And it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's FANTRAX.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm joined today by Justin Mason, and we're going over the players that we may be picking up in our TGFBI leagues. I've collected some lists of players who were available in at least half of those. Also, some names who are available in at least half of Earth leagues. Earth drafted in late February, TGFBI in early March. Well, mostly early March. Some of it may have finished yesterday or something, but we won't get into that today. Moving to the outfield, some names that were available in those leagues but are being taken in the main event. The top one, Victor Scott, unfortunately not really fab consideration. That was a late buzzy player, but he's been optioned. I don't think he's a stash, is he?
No. Not for me. I just don't know when he's going to be up. Like, If he couldn't beat out Dylan Carlson for the job, like, what makes you think once, like, Lars Nootbaar and Tommy Edmund come back that he's going to be able to beat out those guys either? So, I mean, I'm sure he'll be up at some point, but ultimately, like, he's not a guy I'm stashing because I don't have a concrete timetable on when he's going to return.
Yep, I think I'd be interested in bidding on him when he does come up because he could steal a base per game, but just don't know if he's going to be up in April or August at this point. The next outfielder on the list, though, Colton Cowser, not officially confirmed to be in the Baltimore opening day roster as of right now, but it certainly seems to be trending that way. He was taken in almost 80% of TGFBI leagues, but he was barely drafted in Earth. So if you drafted early, he's probably out there. And if you drafted in, you know, a 12-team league, he may be out there as well. Thoughts on Colton Cowser? Is he somebody that you might be going for?
So today on the podcast with Jason Collette, we did preseason predictions. And so we went through every division, and then we did award winners. And we both picked Wyatt Langford to win Rookie of the Year in the American League. But Jason asked me, like, hey, if you had, like, a dark horse guy, like, that nobody's talking about to win AL Rookie of the Year, who would you pick? I said, I'd pick Colton Cowser. Colton Cowser is a top 10 prospect in baseball. And the fantasy industry, what we do largely is when a prospect comes up and doesn't succeed right away, we bury them. And if there is a guy this year, it is Colton Cowser. Dude has a ton of power. He's a good defender. And while, yes, Baltimore's outfield is a little jumbled right now or a little jam-packed, it's got some guys who have some problems. Austin Hayes, I think, got hurt yesterday, which could mean that Cowser's the opening day left fielder. Cedric Mullins, love the dude. I'm always going to love the dude for what he's done for me in my career and in playing in fantasy baseball. But, like, he's had struggles, especially against left-handed pitching, and has moved down the lineup a number of times. So, like, could Colton Cowser supplant him? I think it could happen. I don't know that it's going to. But I just think Cowser is a guy you're getting super, super late or off of the wire that could have a massive impact this year for a really good team in Baltimore. So I really like Colton Cowser.
Yeah, the fact that Couser bats left-handed is a little bit too bad, because if he was a righty, I think you'd be seeing him as expected to start over Mullins probably in center at this point. But he's a legitimate center field defender. That's where he had the, I think, the plurality of his starts last year. I think it was about 8 there, 7 and 5 in each of the other corners. So if he can play center and he's got some power and there's some shaky other options like you're talking about, I think a very interesting player to pick up, somebody worth bidding a meaningful amount of fab dollars on. Other outfielders, Michael Conforto, Ramon Laureano, they're going in the main event, and they were available in a lot of TGFBI or Earth Leagues. Any interest on either of those somewhat boring veterans?
I took Conforto in my main event in one of the last picks, and I regretted it instantly. I should have taken Sean Bouchard, who we'll talk about here in a minute, or taken like Jock Peterson, and those names just kind of slipped my mind. So he'll probably be an early drop for me. He gets hurt too much. He platoons. Laureano, I think, is just a placeholder at this point for Chase DeLauder. And so I think DeLauder would be the name that I would take the gamble on if I'm looking to stash someone over just holding someone like Laureano, who has like no use at this point.
Well, that will make our commenter Charlie C happy. A prospect to roster right now is Chase DeLauder. Sounds like yes. And I think I'm with you on both Conforto and Laureano. I mean, they fill a need. They're probably going to play right now. And that's an important part of fab we shouldn't overlook. If you've been hit by some injuries, they're in the lineup right now. You can throw a buck or two at them and replace them in a few weeks with someone else, but not seeing big appeal with either of those guys. Next on the list, James Wood here has been optioned, was probably never all that likely to make the opening day roster because, you know, is Washington really trying to win all their games this year? I doubt it. Would you stash James Wood? I guess this is less of a fab question, but do you still have interest in a league that's drafting now after we know that he is indeed not opening on the opening day roster?
No. I don't know that there is any guarantee James Wood is up before like August or September. I mean, you look at this Nationals team, they're not going to be competitive. This may be the worst team in baseball from a record standpoint because they've got so many other good teams in the division where they're just going to get beat up left and right. So, what is the incentive for Washington to bring up a guy like James Wood or Dylan Cruz for that matter? Because I know people have, you know, stashed him in some leagues as well. They have zero incentive, right? Their incentive is either to bring him up day one so that way they can attempt to try to get rookie of the year votes and get those extra draft picks, or just leave him down and hold on to that extra year of service time. So I would actually be very surprised if we saw James Wood before August, I would be very, very, very surprised if he made a massive fantasy impact this year. In the future, 2025, I'm going to be all in on James Wood and Dylan Cruz for that matter. But 2024, I don't think either of them make an impact.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think a team's expectations for the upcoming season are a huge part of a prospect like this is fantasy appeal. And the Nationals, like you said, they have just about the lowest expectations out there. If you take James Wood and put him on, you know, 20 other teams, I'm thinking he could force his way onto the opening day roster, and maybe he already would have, but just not looking like what the Nationals are likely to do. A few more outfielders to throw at you here. Sean Bouchard, Mark Canha, Jason Hayward, Charlie Blackmon. These are guys with jobs who, again, were available in at least half of either Earth or TGFBI leagues. So if you drafted early, probably out there. And they are going in the main event. None of them necessarily all that exciting, although maybe at least one of them it sounded like you liked. Sean Bouchard.
Maybe my vision on Sean Bouchard is a little colored by him winning me my auction championship league last year. And it wasn't because he was on my team, but because he hit a home run off of Jorge Alcala, which ruined a Bailey Ober win that and Bailey Ober was on somebody else's team on the last day of the season. So I even have a Sean Bouchard jersey I'll be putting on later because I got one of my auction championship leagues. I reward the guys who helped me out. So
you own half of the Sean Bouchard jerseys in the world. That's pretty cool.
I accidentally bought two, so I actually have to send another one out. It was a Potapalooza prize that I haven't gotten to the post office for yet. So I probably own 2/3 of the Sean Bouchard jerseys out there. But he's going to be playing every day in Colorado in left field. There is power in that bat. Colorado helps, you know, kind of maintain higher BABIPs and, you know, boosts up your average a little bit. Obviously, you want to be careful on the road because Colorado hitters struggle on the road. But I think he is a sneaky kind of late 15 team kind of pick, or a guy you can pick up off the waiver wire and kind of see how he goes. But I mean, I think there's 25 homers in this bat if he gets full-time playing time. And right now, you know, it looks like he could get full-time playing time.
Yeah, 7 homers in 140 plate appearances for his career. If I do the math live on air, that translates to 30 homers for 600 plate appearances. So that's the potential, and that's what he's shown so far. I like that as a late sleeper slash early pickup. A couple more outfielders, more for 12-team leagues. These guys are probably taken if you were in a 15-team draft, but they've been rising up the board in recent main events. Sidon Rafaela has won a job in Boston, an exciting young player with some good speed. Then also Jake Fraley, who's looked like he probably has less competition for playing time, I guess, in Cincinnati with all the injuries, specifically TJ Friedel there. So he's moving up the board. He may have gone from just off your draft board in a 10 or 12 to definitely on the back of it. Interested in either of those guys in shallower leagues?
Yeah, I'm interested in both. Fraley, I mean, has, you know, he's obviously a platoon guy, so he's, you know, going to be on the strong side. But with Friedel out, you know, they've had other injuries and suspensions that have kind of decimated things. Poor Jeff Erickson, man. He deserves something nice. And the Reds are doing everything they can to kind of try to ruin what looked like a really promising future. But ultimately, I think that Fraley's going to play, you know, 2/3 of the time, and there is enough power in the bat and a little bit of speed. The problem is he just gets hurt all the time. So I don't mind picking him up off the waiver wire because you can put him right back on the waiver wire if he does get hurt again. But I think you should kind of ride any sort of hot streak. It's a great park to hit in. And then Rafaela, you know, he was kind of an afterthought most of draft season. He was a guy I drafted a lot in draft champions back in like October, November, because I really thought he was going to make the team. And then it sounded like he wasn't going to make the team. But Wilmer Abreu, I can't even pronounce his first name. He's really struggled. Doesn't look like he's going to make the team. And Rafaela is. And Rafaela has looked really, really good in spring. So I think this is a good opportunity to you know, kind of take a shot on him off the wire. He's going really high, not really high, but a lot higher in main events right now than I actually expected. I think he's going like just outside of the top, like 250 or something like that. If you're getting him off of Fab, fine. I would take that gamble because I think there is some power speed upside there. Someone in the chat said that Fairchild would get a fair share of at-bats. Fairchild is a short side platoon guy. I like Fairchild as a short side platoon guy, so like NL only, fine. You can stream him as a guy if they've got a bunch of lefties coming up. And his girlfriend's TikTok account is fantastic. But other than that, like he probably doesn't register in most mixed leagues.
Important insight there. And yeah, I agree. It seems like he's mostly a short side platoon guy. Maybe, you know, he's 2 or 3 more injuries away from getting something more than that. But if he does get more than that, I'm not sure how interested we'd be. On Rafaela, you mentioned how high he's been going in the main event, 234.
Yeah.
Outfielders going around that. He's right after Taylor Ward, right before Lourdes Gurriel, Jack Suwinski, Kerry Carpenter.
Taking all those guys over Rafaela, yeah. But I mean, that's always the, you know, the heat in the main events are like people like, oh, this guy's got like pop potential. But like, you're telling me you're taking him over Taylor Ward? Jack Suwinski could like hit 40 bombs if he could ever, you'd get a little more aggressive in the zone. Like, I'm not taking him over those guys.
Yeah, neither am I. But if you want some late speed, and certainly, again, to fit the topic of this show, if you drafted early in a 10 or 12 team league and he wasn't out there, he's a name I would be looking at. Let's go over to some pitchers. There's way more pitchers, like I mentioned, so I'm probably going to give you groups of guys and you can dig into whichever of them are particularly interesting to you. Again, pitchers get injured a lot more than hitters, so there's been way more shakeups in the rotation depth charts. if you drafted January or February, I always draft a ton of pitchers. If I'm drafting super early, probably want to leave with no more than one hitter on the bench for this very reason. Mm-hmm. Is that something you'd do as well?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on kind of the makeup of my team. So usually I like to get two hitters and then I'll do five pitchers, but it's also, I'll do a lot of relievers because I want to, you know, in your first weekend. So because they start season on Thursday, you know, a lot of teams have three games. Some have two. I don't think anybody has four games to start the weekend. But a lot of your starting pitchers aren't going to go. So, like, a lot of the guys we're going to talk about right here, they're not starting this weekend, right? And right. So in order to maximize stats, what I tend to do is I load up on relief pitchers that might get an inning, a clean inning, or might steal a save, or might steal a win. And then I drop those guys for these guys we're about to talk about if they're still available on the wire.
That's a good call. So the top guy, you won't be able to get him on Fab this weekend if you drafted very recently. That's Gavin Stone. He was, in fact, taken in all of the TGFBI leagues, but I threw him on here because if you drafted early, for example, in mid to late February when the Earth Leagues were drafting, he's probably available in nearly all of them. And he certainly would have been available in some 10 and 12 team leagues that drafted up before the last couple days. Gavin Stone did not look good at all as a rookie last year, but was a pretty big prospect and has been given the faith of the Dodgers to be their fifth starter for now. So if you're in a league that drafted early enough that Gavin Stone is still out there, because remember, he's been more or less named in the rotation for a few weeks now, probably couldn't get him if you drafted recently. But if he's still out there, is this the kind of guy that you'd go big on or just the kind of guy that you want on your roster for a couple weeks?
I don't know that I would go big on him. Just, I mean, he is in the Dodgers rotation, which is something to, there's something to be said for, you know, just getting a guy who's going to be able to get a bunch of win potential. And he has looked really good. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's like under a walk per inning so far in spring training. And the strikeouts have been there as well. So, like, I think there is some upside here. I'd be cautious because the Dodgers, you know, once they start getting arms back, is he going to be in the rotation? I don't know for sure. He could force the issue, and we do kind of expect him to go with a six-day rotation rather than a six-man rotation to kind of protect Yamamoto a little bit. But ultimately, I don't think I would go crazy, but I would throw some bids on there. Like, I think, you know, if he's available in your league, you know, maybe a $15 bid out of $1,000, like just in case, you know, nobody else goes crazy.
Yeah, seems reasonable. I like Gavin Stone, but I'm right there with you. No guarantee in any way that he's, you know, ready to go and is going to make 30 starts for the best team in baseball or anything like that. Another starting pitcher who has risen up the draft boards quite a bit in the main event is Garrett Crochet, and he's risen so recently that he is quite likely to be available in your league unless you drafted very recently. In TGFBI leagues, he's available in more than 60% of them, and he's available in more than 80% of Earth Leagues. Garrett Crochet has yet to start a major league game, but he's going to this year, and he's going to start right away for the Chicago White Sox. Is this a very exciting, you know, breakout starter, or is this somebody that we should probably be, you know, cautious on and wait to see until he's got a few more starts under his belt?
So this is really interesting. Is Garrett Crochet their opening day starter?
Yep, he is indeed.
So
that
what
doesn't
that
say much about Crochet. It says something about
it says a lot about the White Sox and just, you know, the state of that rotation now that Dylan Cease is not in it. But the fact that he's the opening day starter to me tells me they believe in him and that they're going to just give him as much rope as possible. Now, I do worry about him being able to hold up over the course of a full season, but Garrett Crochet has a ton of strikeout upside. He's looked really, really good in spring. He's locked into this rotation. It's not a good team, so wins might be an issue, but if you're picking him up off the waiver wire, yeah, if you're going big on a starting pitcher, this is one of the ones that you should probably go big on.
Yeah, very big talent, certainly. He was the 11th overall pick back in the 2020 draft. And the fact that he came out in that draft is probably what's screwed up his career so far in many ways. He reached the majors in 2020 before he ever got to play in a minor league game. And in fact, he didn't pitch in a minor league game until last year because he got hurt. He didn't pitch at all in 2022, and he spent all of 2021 in the majors. So a very weird career for Crochet. And if he does finally get a bit of normalcy, he could really hit the ground running. The only thing that I will say here is, can you guess how many total innings Garrett Crochet threw last year?
I'd say 30-something.
Yeah, you're high, 25.
Okay.
So that's the only problem here. So I like what you mentioned about him being the opening day starter. That does mean the White Sox are going to need to lean on him some. But, you know, 25 innings last year, how long is the leaning going to continue? But
yeah, so maybe don't go crazy. Like, because you don't want to blow all that fab and then he gets shut down like halfway through the season or something like that to protect him. But ultimately, like, especially if you're getting him off the waiver wire, it means he can go back on the waiver wire fairly easily. And he could deliver some really good, like, front half of the season innings that might be valuable, especially in terms of strikeouts.
Yep, definitely. And you got to really manage your pitching staffs for the next 2-3 weeks. A lot of the time, pitching changes so much throughout the year. Guys get hurt, guys get better, guys get worse. If you're planning your August pitching staff right now, probably doing it wrong. Some more pitchers who have been rising up draft boards in just a minute, but I want to talk to you about our other sponsor, Rival Fantasy. It's officially fantasy baseball season. I don't know if you noticed, Justin. And it's time for MLB Best Ball on Rival Fantasy. That's right. Rival Fantasy now has Best Ball. Full season lobbies are live now until opening day with both fast and slow drafts. Then weekly and daily drafts will be available from opening day through the end of the World Series. Best Ball is all the fun of the draft without the season-long management. Enter a league, draft your squad, and the app does the rest. No need to set your lineup or make waiver moves. The highest scores at the end of the season will be the winners. Invite your friends and start drafting for the 2024 fantasy baseball season today. Sign up at joinrival.com/rotowire for a $200 deposit match and $25 in free entries. Welcome to the future of fantasy sports. Welcome to Rival Fantasy. Back here with Justin Mason on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, talking about the players we will be looking to pick up in TGFBI this weekend, and also the players who are rising off draft boards for any of the drafts we or you may have upcoming in the next week. Three pitchers on this list who were taken in all or nearly all TGFBI leagues, but if you drafted earlier, they were probably available. Tyler McGill is going to be in the rotation with the Mets. Casey Mize going to be in the rotation with the Tigers, and Jared Jones going to be in the rotation for the Pirates. Again, mostly all taken in recent 15-team leagues, but they might be available in a 12-teamer. And certainly if you drafted early, all these guys were fairly off the radar. Which direction would you be looking there? With the veteran McGill? I guess he's the veteran compared to these two. Casey Mize or Jared Jones, the younger options?
Have they announced Jared Jones in the rotation? I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, true. I said going to, but I should say trending towards, and even then it's not a lock. So we have him as one of the starting five at RotoWire right now. He's fifth on the depth chart, but good correction there.
Yeah, because if he's in the rotation, it's Jared Jones for me. I just really, 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 really like the stuff. That ballpark's fantastic to pitch in. It's so weird. If you had asked me, you know, you just asked me like how many innings did Garrett Crochet throw. If you had asked me how many innings Tyler McGill had thrown last year, there's no way I would have told you 125. Like I would have been like, oh, 60 or, you know, 50 or something like that. Like, and McGill's looked really, really good. And not that long ago, everybody was really, really excited about Tyler McGill. So I think McGill's been slept on quite a bit. I like all three of these guys. Casey Mize, I'm surprised he's going to be in the rotation. I really thought they'd give the spot to Matt Manning and send Mize down so that way he could, or start him on the IL so that way he could kind of ramp up after Tommy John. Problem with Mize is there's just not a ton of strikeout upside. And coming off of Tommy John, I just don't know how many innings they're really going to let him throw. So I think for me, it's probably Jared Jones and then Tyler McGill, unless we get news that Jones isn't going to be up to start the season, and then it would shift to McGill.
Yeah, both Jones and McGill have some potential to actually be quite good. Jones, because he's young and we haven't seen him yet. It seems to be taking some steps. And McGill, because he had good peripherals, quite good peripherals his first couple years. poor ERAs, but then what happened last year was the ERA jumped to meet the peripherals, or the other way around. Sorry, the peripherals jumped to meet the ERA. They got bad, and then he suddenly deserved his ERA. It wasn't what we wanted, but just one bad season. So maybe there's something there. Next name on the list here, Ryan Weathers. He was basically completely off the draft board. It wasn't taken in a single Earth League. So if you drafted in February, he's definitely out there. And in TGFBI, he's available in over 80% of leagues. And it makes sense that he wouldn't have been drafted because he really hasn't shown anything at the major league level. And it didn't look like he had any real shot at a job. But three injuries in the rotation in Miami means he's going to be there at least to start. And at least this spring, he looks different than Ryan Weathers. So are you catching the hype here or not too interested?
I'm starting to, because I've always been in the Ryan Weathers is boring as talk about the weather conversation. And but he has looked much better and he's getting a ton of strikeouts. He isn't walking guys as a result of, you know, going for those strikeouts either. So like the command and the control have been very good. And that park is really good to pitch in. So I have come on board late. I'm still on the Max Meyer train too, and he's made the rotation as well. I know he's coming off of Tommy John, but man, his stuff is so good. And he was looking like he was going to turn into an elite starting pitcher before that Tommy John. So both Meyer and Weathers are guys that I like.
Yeah, one or two commenters definitely liking Meyer. Hey, there was one here comparing Garrett Crochet to Max Meyer. Who would you go for?
I think Crochet, because Crochet is just locked into the rotation as long as he's healthy. Meyer is probably the first man out once they do get a healthy arm back.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Both talented, both no real confidence in their innings floors. Mm-hmm. And they're both there now, so they're both interesting now. But I agree with you. If I'm to predict who is starting on April 25th, Crochet is more likely to still be on the team. The next starter on this list, Alex Cobb. He was going undrafted for a lot of draft season because it looked like he was going to be out for quite a bit, recovering from, was it hip surgery that he had?
Yeah.
And it originally, yeah, looked like, you know, he could miss 2 months. And, you know, he's only Alex Cobb. Do we really want to sit on Alex Cobb for 2 months? But now it looks like he's only going to miss about 2 weeks. Potentially quite an interesting pickup if you're able to pick him up this weekend. Would you be investing some actual fab dollars in Alex Cobb?
So this is definitely a roster construction question. If you've got like injury risk already on your pitching staff or you're stashing a bunch of or a couple injured guys and you probably can't afford to stash Alex Cobb for 2 more weeks, you don't want to limit your bench spots early on in the season. I know people are like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to start my starters. And then but like a rash of injuries happen or you just want to optimize your lineup week in and week out. And that can become a real problem. But if you were smart and you didn't stash a bunch of injured guys, and Alex Cobb's a really good stash right now because he's going to go right back into that rotation. It's a great ballpark. The Giants have gotten better this offseason. So I do like Alex Cobb as a stash play because he's only going to be gone for maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on not wanting to clog up the bench. But usually it takes, you know, a couple weeks for your injuries to really start adding up. So I think you can probably get away with it because Cobb should be back by then. We've got a comment saying Luis Gil needs to be discussed. That's a good comment because the next player on our outline is, should we skip Luis Gil? No, let's go with Luis Gil. Looks like he has a shot at the rotation here in New York, although not necessarily guaranteed just yet. Technically Luke Weaver still in that mix, I guess, but Luis Gil coming back from injury has not pitched since 2022, but had a 3.78 ERA across 7 major league starts in 2021 and 2022. It's not often that you get somebody who's still prospect eligible who debuted 3 mm-hmm. seasons ago. So he can get a little bit lost, I think, for that very reason. So what are your thoughts on Luis Gil? Is he interesting pickup, or do we got to wait until we know that he's definitely in the rotation?
I think he's an interesting pickup because I think even if he's not in the rotation, he'll factor into the bullpen. And he is got amazing stuff. Like he has looked just dynamite in spring training, like getting a lot of whiffs. And I don't know that he's going to be in the rotation. I think he's going to be kind of like a multi-inning reliever, at least to start. But that doesn't mean he can't get into the rotation. And I don't mind like taking early shots on some of these guys that hey, they're going to start in the bullpen, but they could move into the rotation. Right now, like, they're projected fifth starters like Clayton Beter, and then you mentioned Luke Weaver as options. Neither of them are holding Luis Gil back from, like, taking over a starter role, you know, over the course of the full month of the season, as long as he's healthy. I think the only problem is he just has not thrown a lot of innings, and I don't know if the Yankees really want him to try to go five innings every fifth day. I think they're probably going to, like, be very careful with him in terms of his kind of workload management. And so if you're a guy, if you're a person in a league where, like, you can't really roster a middle reliever, then you probably shouldn't roster Gil, unless you're in a league where relievers, you have, like, a reliever starting pitcher designation, like a points league, and you can put him in, you know, as a SP, even though he's going to be an RP, and kind of rack up points on those days off for your other starters. I think that's a little bit of a cool strategy.
I think our commenters might be reading the outline, because
I know they must be.
Ryan Nelson, we've got a request to discuss. Now, he was two names down on the outline, so I'll combine him with Bowden Francis just so I can get this in here. Ryan Nelson was available in half of TGFBI leagues. Bowden Francis for Toronto, available in just over half. Neither of them was taken in a single Earth League back in February. A good spring from Nelson. He's safely in the job, but he was not very interesting last season. Bowden Francis, also combining him on there, looks like he's going to get the job at least temporarily in Toronto, but isn't necessarily someone who comes with a lot of pedigree, has yet to make a major league start. Interested in either of those names?
So I wish you could get, like, the floor of Bowden Francis and mix it with the ceiling of Ryan Nelson, because then you'd have an elite starting pitcher. Because, like, Ryan Nelson, like, he has a ton of strikeout upside, but he can really, really struggle with the command and control. And that's one of the things we saw last year, was, like, he walked too many guys and he let balls leave the yard. The control's been a little bit better this spring. Command hasn't really been. So I think Nelson is one of those guys that, you know, you can take a dart throw on late because there's a lot of upside, or pick him up off the wire because there's a lot of upside, but just be ready to drop real quick, because I think he could also torch your ratios. Whereas Francis, like, I don't see a lot of strikeout upside in the profile, but what I do see is a guy who's got pretty decent command and control and could actually stick in the rotation for a while in Toronto, which is a good team to be pitching on, because they're going to score you a lot of runs. So I think he could be maybe a cheap source of wins.
Yeah, I hear you there. Let's move on to some more late pitchers. I'm going to go big group at once here, because I also want to talk about some names for 12-team leagues and also some relievers. A whole bunch of starting pitchers, though, who are being taken in the main event but weren't necessarily in 15-team leagues in early March and before. How about I'll just list the name and you stop me if there's someone that you have a meaningful thought on other than, yeah, sure, worth a buck or two. Mike Soroka?
No, thanks.
Jordan Wicks?
I like Wicks, and I like that he's getting a shot in the rotation. There's not a ton of upside there, but especially in a 15-team league, I think he could be a really interesting innings eater type.
Yeah, interesting late option for me as well. Keaton Wynn?
Keaton Wynn is a, like, pitching plus stuff plus darling that Eno really, really loves. Eno's a great guy and a really, really good pitching mind. Problem is, I don't know where the innings come from. He's coming off of, like, elbow soreness during this spring, and Alex Cobb is going to be back really soon.
Yeah, so maybe only a streamer level of investment there. JP France,
another guy who's taken a big jump in stuff plus in the offseason. I don't know if he went to Driveline or whatever, but I think he's going to get a shot in the rotation. I think this is a better dart throw than Witt.
All right. How about Johnny Brito?
Don't really care.
Yep. Nick Martinez?
Pinches in Cincinnati. No, thanks.
Yep. Cole Irvin?
He's still Cole Irvin.
Yep. Right with you. Kyle Hendricks? Still Kyle Hendricks?
Still Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah. Michael Lorenzen? Still Michael Lorenzen?
Yeah, he's still Michael Lorenzen.
All right. And then the final one on here, Ronel Blanco, was not taken in a single TGFBI or Earth League, but is going in the majority of main event leagues. Looks like he maybe could start at least at the beginning of the year, looks like he should open the year as the Astros' fifth starter. Do we care there?
He's looked really good, and he has some interesting stuff. And so I think I would take a dart throw on Blanco and see just kind of how things work out. He may not be long for the rotation because once they start getting healthy again, then he's probably the first man out. But I think an interesting dart throw for the early season.
Yeah, for sure. And as I've said a couple times, you should manage your pitching staff for the next few weeks. In most cases, you don't know what's going to happen a few months from now. And if he's good in the next few weeks, one more pitcher who is named in the comments several times, and we touched on him just briefly, Max Meyer. He didn't show up on here because a few too many leagues he was taken in. So I guess this is our transition to the 12 team names for starters. Everybody loves Max Meyer. We touched on him briefly. We like him a good amount, but we just don't know how long he's going to be starting.
Yeah, I love him, but he's coming off of Tommy John, and so I don't know how long he's going to be in the rotation. But I think, you know, this is an interesting way of bringing up the fact that, like, we've been talking about for years, like, why doesn't the Marlins, like, trade pitchers for hitting? Maybe this is why, right? Like, all of a sudden you can go from, like, the deepest, like, rotation and, you know, and triple A rotation in baseball to, oh my God, we're now having to start a bunch of guys we weren't anticipating counting on. So maybe it's probably good they didn't trade away all those pitchers.
Another name just to mention real quick in the comments here, Reese Olson, probably taken in every single 15 teamer, but might have been available in some 12s because it wasn't guaranteed that he was going to be in the rotation, but fairly interesting name in Detroit.
I've never been a Reese Olson guy. I think he's got mediocre stuff. A full arsenal that, you know, has value, but like in a 12 teamer, like I just want some more upside than Reese Olson.
All right, and then a handful of names who are jumping from, what, the late 300s and later into, or the, you know, mid 300s into the high 200s, which means they've gone from off the board, I think, in some 10s and 12s to definitely on it. AJ Puck, the most exciting name, speaking of the Marlins and their ever-changing pitching staff. Big fans of AJ Puck here. He's certainly talented. We don't know how many starts we're going to get out of him, but it's a theme here.
I love AJ Puck if this was a video game and you could turn off injuries. I just don't trust him to stay healthy. That being said, if you're getting him off the wire, it means he can go right back on the wire, like I said, a number of guys. So, like, I would take a gamble on AJ Puck because there is just a ton of upside in that arm.
Someone here says Weathers over Puck. I think I would certainly be Puck over Weathers myself.
I think that's close. Honestly, I really do. I think both are interesting gambles.
All right, fair enough. Some other names who are taken in 15, certainly, but you might want to look for in your 12s. James Paxton. Hey, we don't know if he's starting in May, but he's starting now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know how long he's going to be healthy for, but he does pitch on the Dodgers, who are the best team in baseball, and he's going to stay in that rotation until he's hurt. So he's one of those guys you just kind of ride until the wheels fall off, and then you throw him back to the wire and go grab someone else.
Back to the Marlins. Also, Trevor Rogers falls into this camp. How do you see Trevor Rogers compared to some of the other Marlins we're talking about?
And I was so high on Trevor Rogers that I should have had a drug test because I had him like a top 25 starting pitcher a couple years ago, and then he got hurt, and it just has been all downhill ever since. And I don't know that I've even drafted Rogers this year, but I feel like I have betrayed my own child in not doing so. So I'm going to try to get him in the next couple drafts. I think the upside is immense if he can stay healthy. I think the question is, can he stay healthy? I don't know that they can.
Yeah, but with all the other entries in Miami, at least it should be pretty easy for him to open the year in the rotation. Couple more names. Let's just throw these three all together, and you can tell me which of them is your favorite. DL Hall, Garrett Whitlock, Jack Flaherty. Again, all taken in 15s, but potentially available in the 12.
For me, it's Garrett Whitlock. I think he's got the best combination of stuff and ability to stay healthy and in the rotation. I just DL Hall's got great stuff. I just don't know that I trust that he is going to be able to hold up over the course of a full year. He's been a reliever for the last couple of years and has dealt with injury issues. And Jack Flaherty, man, like, I know he's had a couple better starts towards the end of spring, but I just don't trust him at all.
Yeah, the thing with Jack Flaherty is if he's only available in these 12s, is he going to have the upside that's, you know, really particularly exciting in a league with a higher level of replacement value, or is he just going to spend the whole year being one of those replacement level pitchers? And I'm not convinced that it's the former. Should we move on to some relievers to wrap things up here? Again, we're going with the same method. These are relievers who were available in at least half of TGFBI leagues, or with a few exceptions, half of Earth leagues. So they were probably available if you drafted in early March or late February. And if you drafted next week, then these are the guys that you probably want to be looking at late in your draft. The main one, of course, is with Devin Williams going down for half the year in Milwaukee. There's three relievers you might want to bid on in that bullpen: Joel Piamps, Abner Uribe, and Trevor McGill. That's the order that they've been going in drafts in the main event. Is that the order for you as well?
I think it's Piamps, McGill, Uribe. But what I've been saying is take whoever is last in the draft. And so in my main event, I think Uribe's probably got the worst chance of getting saves because he's young and the Brewers don't love to give young guys save opportunities because it ratchets up their arbitration numbers. I got Uribe yesterday because he was the last one available and I was looking for a guy who could potentially be my third closer. So I think Piamps is the guy, at least to start, but I also could see a pretty easy rotation where they just say, you know, a different guy every night, you know, some sort of committee situation. So, but Piamps got the majority of the saves outside of Williams last year. So I assume he will get the majority of the saves with Williams out now.
Yeah. Piamps probably in the lead for me. If I could get all of them for the same fab bid, sure, I would take Piamps, but I'm right there with you on just take whichever guy's cheapest. I think that collectively, even though, you know, we try to do our best as a fantasy industry of nailing down who the next closer is, it's just hard. It's just not based on hard data all the time. It's based on what the manager chooses, and we're not inside manager's heads. We can guess, but all we can really do is guess. And so if you want to fade our collective ability to predict the next reliever, it's not a bad move. And all three of those guys particularly are really close to equal in talent as well. So really the only reason I think that Piamps is going top for most people is he had a few saves last year under a different regime. So it really is. I'm with you. I also would put Piamps first, but it's a very weak logic.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next bullpen situation that is creating some fab opportunities, Johan Duran is going to be out in Minnesota for a little while with an oblique strain. It's not an elbow or a shoulder, which is the sort of thing that risks being a whole year, but obliques are nearly always, you know, a fair medium amount of time that he's going to miss. The top candidates in Minnesota, Griffin Jacks and Brock Stewart. But, you know, we don't know how many saves we'd be bidding on here. It could just be a month's worth. But would you be bidding on these guys?
Yeah, typically these oblique injuries are like 4 to 6 weeks. They said moderate instead of mild in terms of the oblique strain. So I would say like 6 to 8 weeks. So you might get a month and a half, 2 months worth of saves from one of these guys. The problem is, Rocco Baldelli, the manager of the Twins, comes from the Tampa Bay system, which typically does a lot of closer committees. And I think that we could see a closer committee in Minnesota while Duran is out. So I've been taking the cheaper guy, which is Brock Stewart, because he is almost free. You're getting him in like the 26th to 29th round of main events right now. And I think everybody's talking about Griffin Jacks as how he's going to be the dude. My guess is this is some sort of shared role and Brock Stewart gets just as many opportunities. So I'm going to go with a cheaper guy in Brock Stewart.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And again, given that we're probably only bidding on maybe 6 weeks worth of saves here, probably not throwing a ton of money at either of those guys, but you could get a decent handful. Another closer situation to watch is Jordan Romano. We've got a question about him in the chat here. Dealing with elbow inflammation, but he is throwing again. The question here is if you want to speculate on Eric Swanson, but he's dealing with some forearm tightness. The guy who was getting some interest in the main events is Jimmy Garcia for the Blue Jays. Any interest in him there or mostly just letting this one go?
I've taken some dart throws on Garcia. I think he's the opening day closer I don't think Swanson or Romano is going to be ready. I don't know how long that lasts. You know, either Swanson or Romano could be back pretty quick. But I think Garcia is the due day one. And if both of those injuries end up really poorly, Garcia could be the closer until they go out and trade for someone, which I assume they would do. But, you know, you might be able to get a month or two's worth of saves from Garcia.
Yeah, all right. That's more interest than I thought you were going to have, but that's good to know. I think he certainly, that makes sense. This should be in the mix among these other next man up type names. A couple more relievers here. Daniel Hudson was not taken in a single TGFBI or Earth League because I think he was on a minor league contract, but he was officially added to the Dodgers roster last week and is now a pretty popular late reliever dart in the NFBC main event. Does that make sense to you? And does that mean that we should be picking him up if we drafted early and he's available?
So this is a know your rules type of situation with Daniel Hudson. So NFBC, with these early games in Korea that have already happened, they let you get what is called a free look. So you can decide after the fact, right? When we all set our lineups on Thursday, we get to decide whether or not we want to use those players in Korea. Well, Daniel Hudson got a win in Korea. And so some people, including myself, I did this last night in the 24th round, I think it was, 23rd, 24th round. I drafted Daniel Hudson. I'm going to use him to get the cheap win, and then I'm going to drop him. So know your league's rules. If you get a free look like this in an FBC, you do get a free look. You can put him into your lineup and you get that win. If not, don't worry about it. Daniel Hudson's not going to be valuable for fantasy.
All right. That's a good call. Yeah. I wondered what was up with that. And yeah. I had not thought about the whole retroactive. You can make the decision on him based on what he actually did and take him out of your lineup if he had a bad game and keep him in there if he got a win. It's weird, but it makes sense, right? Got to take advantage of it if it's there.
It's the reason why Robert Suarez has jumped like 100-something picks in the ADP, because he got a save in Korea. So people are like, well, I'm jumping him up because I know he's the closer now, but two, I automatically get to bank that save.
Yeah, and again, as pointed out here, you can fab Hudson tonight, and you do get that win, right? Even if you pick him up now, you get the win that happened. It's very weird, but might as well do it if you can. Just a couple more relievers here. Tyler Kinley shows up, but I don't think so. I guess he's Justin Lawrence hasn't yet won the job in Colorado, so a few more people are taking a shot on Tyler Kinley. But
I think they're going to be co-closers, but I don't care. I don't want either closer in Colorado. Yeah. That's just a way to torture ratios.
I don't think I even want all of the Rocky saves if you combine them into one. So if I'm only getting half of the Rocky saves, no interest. Two more relievers to throw at you before we end here. Andrew Nardi, the next man up in Miami. But Tanner Scott sort of found his way, I think, over the course of the spring. So if there was Andrew Nardi buzz, probably no reason for a fab pickup?
Probably not. I was drafting Andrew Nardi as well, but I think he's going to be a guy I drop this weekend as opposed to pick up.
All right. And then the final name on the list here, Jordan Leisure. Or is it Jordan Leisure? I should learn that. Or probably
I think it's Leisure.
Leisure. Yeah. All right. Probably all going to learn it pretty soon because it looks like he's pushing for a roster spot is what the news is in the south side of Chicago. And, you know, the closer in Chicago, is it like maybe Michael Kopech? They haven't said it is. We just want it to be. If it's not him, it's John Brebbia, who's, you know, working through a calf issue. I guess in different leagues, Kopech and Brebbia may be available too. So if you want to give thoughts on any of those, Leisure was the one who was going to be available definitely in 15-teamers. You doing anything in this White Sox bullpen?
I mean, I might take a dart throw on, you know, like I was really into Prelander Baroa before he started dealing with, I think, a shoulder issue. But I mean, I honestly think this is a job that could change hands like 4 or 5 times in the next 2 months. And so I'm just not investing in it other than like I'll maybe take a dart throw at the end of the draft and see if I could sneak a save this weekend. But I think this is a shared job on one of the worst teams in baseball, and I don't really care about that.
Would that dart throw be on Kopech? Have you got any of the hype on, hey, he was really good a couple years ago as a reliever? Maybe.
You know, here's the thing. So I drafted Michael Kopech on like a crap ton of teams last year. And I like his first start of the season, I was recording with Paul and we were watching the game live while we're recording, gave up 7 home runs, I think it was. And I will never get over that PTSD. So while I'm usually the type of guy that goes, I don't care what you've done to me previously, I'm willing to just bet on what I think is going to happen. I am still not over the trauma of Michael Kopech from last year. So there is no way I will draft him.
All right, fair enough. That is the official advice of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Do not draft Michael Kopech because he made Justin Mason sad that one time. Yeah. But Justin, you've made me happy by agreeing to come on today's show. Thank you very much for being the first guest for the Sunday RotoWire Podcast this year. Thank you very much. You got anything to plug on the way out? I know this is probably your third or fourth stream in the last 24 hours, so there's tons of stuff out there for people to check out.
Yeah, I am doing a bunch of live stream drafts on my YouTube, which I think is Justin Mason FWFB. I've got 2 auction championship drafts or auctions that I'm doing tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, and then 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday in the RotoWire Online Championship League tomorrow night Monday night at 10. So if you want to come watch those, I write 3 days a week at Fantasy Pros, 5 days a week at Fangraphs, and I'm on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast and the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast.
All right. Well, thanks again. Thanks so much, Justin. Thank you, listeners. We hope we gave you a decent number of names to pick up in your leagues. And we'll be back every week and every day here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast presented by Fantrax.